Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 499 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the crap bag needs to talk a little UFC and Wimbledon. At 12:30, I'm going to be honest, I completely forgot about what Chad and I talked about on the phone, but in mere minutes, I do know that we need to talk college football alignment as the craziness continued through July 4th weekend. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today is the newest addition to Shirts and Skins. On top of being an integral part of the Flex ATX team, rumor has it he may also be the newest member of the Pac-12. It is Cameron Parker. Cam, if that's true, congrats. How are you today?
Thank you, guys, and greetings to all.
And sitting across from me is the Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie, who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You're damn right. I think the upcoming rivalry between Cameron and Cal is going to be a natural. I think it's going to be just vicious.
Until Cal apparently folds the football program, because a lot of people were starting to dig that grave over the weekend.
Yeah, Cameron will shut him down. I think it'll take 2 years, but I think Cameron's going to win both those matchups. Hope everybody's doing well on this Tuesday. Hope you had a great 4th of July weekend, and we'll just start right there. How was your time off? How did you enjoy the 4th? Did you watch things explode?
The kids threw poppers, if that counts. Didn't really do the fireworks thing, but
poppers count? You got young kids? Right. That's perfect.
Yeah, the kids loved it, and I'm on record as despising fireworks, so I know that makes me very un-American. It was a great weekend, though. It started off on Friday. Hung out with some of my volleyball buddies. One of them turned 40 over the weekend, so we rented a boat, and we were out on Lake Travis for about 4 or 5 hours.
You told me you were going to do that. That's a good time.
Yeah, that was a blast. I mean, it really appeals to my redneck sensibility, that is to jump really foolishly off of high places into water where there's a pretty good chance I could hurt myself.
Yeah, forever you may still have it, right? Do you still have the picture up on Twitter of you jumping in? Like,
yes.
Cliff diving in Mexico or whatever it was?
No, that was Maui. That was
Maui,
okay. That was off of Black Rock in Maui. That's still one of my favorite plunges of all time, although, man, I feel like I broke my tailbone and had to suffer through that the rest of the week because I did not land proper. But, yes, I do love jumping off of dangerously high places into water, and I got to do that a couple of times off this boat, and they also had the slide off the back, too.
That's good stuff.
And it was fun just getting to hang out with a good group of people. And the rest of the weekend was great, too. Played volleyball a couple different times. That's always fun. Got to hang out with family, had a dinner at our place where a neighborhood family came over last night, made some porchetta, some panzanella salad, and just had a good time of it. How about you?
Very nice. I spent time with the folks. By the way, happy anniversary to my folks today.
Oh, yes.
54 years. My dad always makes the last Independence Day joke because they got married on July 5th. Mm. So 54 years for them today. I got to see them. I got to see my niece. Got the niece hanging out with my daughter, which is critical. The niece and I went and hit some tennis balls. So that was fun. I hadn't hit tennis balls in a while anyway, but to do that was cool, and hit it around a little bit with her was fun. She likes to get out and be active and work out, unlike my child. So, yeah, I had a good time seeing them. My dad is addicted to the brewery in Cisco, and we got to take the niece to the brewery.
First
time she could legally drink at the brewery. So all that was going on, and, yeah, just hung out with the family. It was scorching hot. So, you know, staying in unless you were ready to get really sweaty, but it was a good time.
So is Doc like Cliff in Cheers at this brewery now? I mean, when he walks in, does everybody know his name? Everybody's coming up to talk to him?
Yeah, I don't know that they know him by name every time, but they know him. Like, okay. He walks in, he's always wearing the same cowboy hat that he wears every time, and he's walking in, and he's talking to all people. Yes, so he's a regular now.
That's great. I'm glad he found that post-retirement life, you know?
He's a regular at a brewery in his hometown that he never thought would even be wet. So he's loving life right now.
That's great.
Cameron, what'd you do for the 4th of July? Did you get to see some stuff blow up? What happened?
A little bit. Went out to Windy Point Park on Lake Travis.
Oh.
Some friends grilled out, you know. It was a nice, relaxing weekend.
My neighborhood is known for going out of its way for the 4th and for New Year's Eve. They were a little subdued this year. I don't know if burn bans were a reason. I don't know if finances were a reason. Maybe people had plans and were just away. But my neighborhood, now don't get me wrong, for a normal neighborhood, it would have seemed extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But for my neighborhood, normally we have someone right down the street from us, to where we're picking up pieces the next day in our yard. Hunks of, you know, fireworks. Mm-hmm. And I made sure to water the grass a couple times just to get ready. But yeah, it was a little tamer, but we sat out there like a couple old people last night, watched the fireworks go off. We were by ourselves because the kid is still hanging out with the folks. So we had a little adult watching fireworks time. Sweet. Tonight we're having date night. We're going to a place of our choosing instead of worrying about what the child won't eat.
Great. Where y'all going?
Yes. My wife enjoys the Roaring Fork. So we're going to go check that out.
That's a great spot. I hope y'all have a phenomenal meal there. Can I ask a question related to fireworks going off on July 4th?
Of course.
And the weekend leading into July 4th.
Uh-huh.
Can we come to some sort of compromise with regards to when we're no longer setting fireworks off in neighborhoods? I realize it's going to be happening like deeper into the urban setting. I mean, it's going to sound like Hanoi during the Tet Offensive, but is there some time that we can stop the fireworks in suburban America? Like, is 10 o'clock, is that asking too much? 11 o'clock? Like, what is a fair time to ask for here?
I'm going to go strictly off of what I've experienced in my neighborhood. The answer to your question is 1 a.m. 1 a.m. of event day.
That's too late.
Yeah, I agree, but that's the way my neighborhood does it, about to that level. Because we were going to bed... Let's see, my wife went to bed last night in the 11 o'clock range, something like that. I went to bed more of a 12:31, somewhere in there, and I was still hearing some boom, bang, boom, boom at like 12:40, I think.
Look, I get it if July 4th is going into the weekend or if it's on a Saturday. Like, that's fine. You get a little bit more leeway there. But a lot of people had to get up and go to work today.
I know.
We don't need to
be
hearing fireworks going off at 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning. That was happening in our neighborhood, though.
Totally agree.
The other thing that I did this weekend that I just remembered, Chad, is I took the kids to the new Minions movie.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Whew, boy, that's a tough time.
For you, that had to be difficult.
Well, there was arts and crafts time ahead of the movie, too. And then there were like 35 previews. So this was like a three-hour ordeal. Oof. With something that should have been an hour and a half. And
how long was the movie itself? Did they at least get the movie at 90 minutes?
Yeah, the movie was about 90 minutes. So, I 2 hours, I think, is reasonable. The fact that we had an extra hour, we were making minion eyes that we were putting on and taking pictures, and we got to wear the hard hats and everything else. And it was fun to see the kids having fun. But at the same time, I'm like, man, there's got to be a better way for us to spend these 3 hours the next time this opportunity arises, if you will.
I'm a little skittish about the Minions movie. The Gru movie or whatever it was, Despicable Me stuff, those were all right. But the first Minions movie didn't do a lot for me. This is kind of a combo of the two ideas. So will this at least hold my attention if I go?
Yes. The second half is better than the first half.
Okay.
If the entire movie was like the first half, I would have discouraged people from going to see the movie. And honestly, the Minions kind of annoy me in general. Like, their voices annoy me, but this is more about Gru than anything else. It is the rise of Gru.
That's what I'm counting on.
You get a fair amount of him.
Andy from the 50s here.
Exactly.
My God.
Exactly. But we did see a couple of those at the theater, but they were also, because it was a draft house, they were showing videos, like Minion-related videos.
Okay.
And you'd be surprised at the, or maybe you wouldn't, at the amount of, like, little people dressed as Minion snuff films that exist on YouTube.
Oh, good grief. I would be surprised. You're right. Okay. That would surprise me.
I never know with you.
That would surprise me. I'm not into that sort of thing. But I might end up seeing that movie. We hope you got to see a movie, maybe hang with the family. Maybe you did experience what Trey did, which is being able to jump into a little water. That's always a good idea when it's so blazing hot outside. Hope everybody is safe and sound and coming off a good 4th of July weekend. So there's a lot of stuff on the board today. Obviously, it is that sort of dead time of sports, but there's always some headlines rolling through. And Trey, I'll be honest with you, I have spent the entire long weekend trying to process this USC-UCLA story. Mm-hmm. It has not made sense to me yet. I don't get it. I don't like it. I'm trying to work my way through it. But that, by the time we got off the air and we got maybe a day into that long weekend, and it was done from the Big Ten. The Big Ten okayed it. In what felt like 10 seconds, the Pac-12 responded with, yeah, we're completely shocked, completely taken aback. We did not realize USC and UCLA were about to leave us. A Pac-12 official says, quote, we just got soonered and horned.
Yeah.
They made that reference to last year and what Texas and OU did going to the SEC. But I'll just tell you, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this. I tell my 76-year-old father over the long weekend that USC and UCLA are headed to the Big Ten, and he stared at me like I was an alien.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just still trying to figure all this out.
It doesn't make sense. It's not going to make sense for a long time. And there are some who are saying that college football will never be the same, which I completely agree with that sentiment. Obviously, at this point, with some of the big names moving from one conference to another that are. But I disagree that college football is going to be infinitely less enjoyable to watch. I still think it's going to have a ton of value, but this separation that needed to happen between the biggest dogs and those second-tier schools that make up the FCS, some Big 12 schools, some Pac-12 schools, like that needed to go down if we really were going to rework and rethink this whole college football playoff idea. And unfortunately for those who love the Pac-12, and those who are watching the Pac-12 probably about to crumble right now, even though there's a report out now suggesting that Pac-12 administrators are going to get together to try and work on that next TV contract.
That'll work well.
Yeah, to help try and entice some decent schools out west. The Pac-12 is probably about to fall apart in large part because George Klyevkov made a big bet against an obvious idea that benefited everybody to try and gain more control with that entire process. And it may have cost him the conference as a result.
In terms of that 8-3 vote for the expanded playoff.
That was being completely driven by Klyevkov. And even though the Big Ten and ACC had to go along with that, clearly the Big Ten didn't think too kindly of that stupidity either. If they just went and poached your best school in terms of brand, and then another school that has been very important to the history of the Pac-12 as well, that obviously is attached at the hip with USC. So the Big Ten, they completely backstabbed Klyevkov and the Pac-12 as they were supposedly going along with them to keep the playoff from expanding to 12 teams.
But here's what's fascinating as you say that. I'm trying to work through that part of it too. Do we know that USC and UCLA would have essentially stood down if that vote had gone through? Because remember, when the vote was discussed and those three conferences talked about why they said no, they referenced Texas and Oklahoma. They referenced, well, Texas and Oklahoma did this and went to the SEC, so we just don't know what the landscape's going to be. So it's freaking us out. We've got to reassess, and that's why we're voting no. I wonder, like, what kind of assurance do we have that the USC and UCLA would have actually stopped? How do we know the Big Ten would have stopped if we go expanded 12-team playoff back then?
Because when you're talking about an additional billion-plus that was going to be divvied pretty equally amongst the major Power 5 conferences with a little bit more of a trickle-down with the G5 because they have less seats at the table, if you will. They only have that one guaranteed playoff spot. And then factoring Notre Dame in as well, there's a lot more money that is being parsed out to all these different factions that I think gives you pause in making this cataclysmic of a move. To go from something that has been your home for everybody's lifetime to something that's totally foreign but makes a ton of financial sense.
Yeah, I wish we could crank it back in time a little bit and see what would happen if they would agree on the 12 team. So this announcement, I guess the official announcement, maybe I don't know if it's been made by the Big Ten, but they've okayed it according to these reports. So it is going to happen. So, Trey, I looked up a couple of quick numbers for you. I'm going to put on my old man reading glasses to make sure I get this right. But I was just curious on the road trips because I went through it with my team where my team goes into a new conference. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, these road trips. Shortest road trip for A&M until Texas and Oklahoma jump in is like 500 and something miles with LSU. And so it changes, you know, your world. So I looked
at... Is LSU closer than, I guess, Fayetteville? Yeah. I guess you go to Dallas, though, so that is closer.
True. Yeah, even if it was Fayetteville, I think Baton Rouge might be a little closer if we look at the trip itself. But I looked at the hours it takes to drive from one to the other and the miles from L.A. to all the Big Ten venues.
Okay.
And without going through them individually, here's what I'll tell you. In the East, they average a 35-hour drive and 2,387 miles. In the West, which is supposed to be closer, obviously, a little bit, 28 hours on average, 1,902 miles. Trey, there's one place in the Big Ten, one, where you can drive from L.A. to that place in less than 24 hours.
Yikes.
One. And it's Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hmm.
That's it. One place. And that's the place that's less than 1,500 miles to drive.
I mean, there's two trips that are practically coast to coast, Chad.
Yeah. USC and UCLA will have to drive. If you're going to get in a car and do it, they'll have 10 different matchups that require a 2,000-mile drive. 10 of them. Obviously, they don't border a state. You got to go three states over to get to the Big Ten. Right now, the Big Ten has 11 states. They all border each other. It's one big landmass. Just like the SEC. Say what you want about Texas and OU, but it makes sense geographically. I'll be the old man here when we talk geography. Oklahoma right now borders three states that have SEC teams. Texas has one in their state and borders two others. And when they join, there'll be 12 states, Trey. 12 that all you could drive from one to the other, crossing all those borders. One big old landmass of SEC states. But that is not what it's going to be in this new Big Ten. So it's going to take a long, long while for me to grab a hold of it. But I just also think of, just like I did with A&M and the smaller teams, I think of USC and UCLA volleyball and basketball and all that. And I think of Wisconsin basketball, Wisconsin women's basketball. They're having to make those trips back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put the Wisconsin women's basketball team, and I know they make trips and they go to tournaments and stuff, but for a conference series, right in the middle of their conference schedule, you're going to send them 2,000-3,000 miles across the country. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little bit easier when you're talking about air travel.
It does.
And USC, and I'm assuming UCLA, possess the financial means to make sure that all of their teams can hop on planes to make that happen. And yeah, the Big Ten, they're going to have to figure that out too, I mean, because that is not a tenable bus trip one way or the other. But it's crazy to see this all continuing to take shape. I mean, the Big 12 is meeting with four of the current Pac-12 schools about possible membership today, maybe happening while we speak. The four schools being Utah, Colorado, and the two Arizona schools. And Chad, I can't help but to wonder if the Big 12 is trying to play some weird game that nobody else is playing right now. Like, why are you focusing on these four schools that, with the exception of Utah in football, have all been pretty mediocre athletics department-wise over the last few years? Like, why not put your best foot forward with regards to, like, Oregon, number one, and then probably Washington, number two. Like, you need to try and get the best of what's left to join your conference, even if you're the Big Ten or the SEC, but especially if you're not either of those other two conferences, because so much else is uncertain right now. And that includes in the ACC as well, by the way.
Yeah, I would say, I was reading over the weekend that the Pac-12 is looking at both a Big 12 idea and some ACC ideas. So they're trying to consider all this other stuff. So the idea would be that the Big 12 might bring in these four teams and go to ultimately that. Oh, that would be 16.
16.
Right, that'd be 16 once Texas and Oklahoma are gone.
One of the lessons that I'm trying to impart on my kids right now is that you don't always have to be first to complete something. Being first, unless you're talking about a foot race or something like that, right?
You're swimming. Or
being first, like being the first to finish a test. Like, that is so much less important than being the one who got the most answers right. Mm. The Big 12, it feels like they're trying to be that next conference to 16 to say, see, we got 16. We should still be a part of the conversation with that top tier of college football, versus really being smart about it and making sure that they are using their heads to think about who they should try and bring in if they are going to continue adding schools. I don't fault them for continuing to add schools. They need to make every effort possible to add Oregon and to add Washington before they consider these other four schools, even Utah.
Man, see, and if that happens, then you're ripping apart. Again, I'll be the old man. You're ripping apart the Civil War, and you'll rip apart the Apple Cup, and nobody will care about those things. But me, I get it. And yes, I've heard of the aluminum tubes called airplanes. Somebody texted. I get that part, yes. Air travel is part of that. But that is a long, long way to go. And don't tell me that a team getting on an airplane in the middle of conference season like that and going 2,000-3,000 miles wouldn't matter. And then the fan base thing does matter to me. Your fans cannot readily get in cars and drive. One reason I am looking forward to the new SEC is that I get that 100-mile trip back, Trey.
Yeah.
The 100-mile trip from where my school plays to where not only a team plays, but a big rival plays. But then the Oklahoma thing. I never would have thought the idea of driving to Norman, Oklahoma would seem short. But it is by SEC standards. Yeah. So all of that kind of makes sense to me. But if I'm a USC or UCLA fan, and we'll try to talk to some people out there in LA, are they jacked about this? Are they pumped about this idea of disconnecting themselves from everybody but each other and then having to go that far to play conference games?
I imagine that there are mixed emotions right now, but one thing they realize is that they want to be with the haves and not the have-nots as college football evolves into its next form in 2025. And standing pat in that conference, which has been plagued by poor leadership for a long time now, and even though they've tried to be forward-thinking with regards to a conference network and supposed TV money, they've fallen well short with that. And USC, first and foremost, but also UCLA, realized that even if it means more 4 to 6 hour plane rides to get to those conference road games, it's going to be well worth it with the tens of millions of dollars that you'll be making in the Big Ten versus the bucket of peanuts, you know, relatively speaking, that you'd be making by sticking around in your current conference.
Plus, not that it matters, but you realize that their conference office is going to go from Los Angeles, right where they are, to Indianapolis, Indiana? That's where you now have to go for all your meetings and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, Texas and Oklahoma are cool moving their situation from Dallas to Hoover, Alabama, or Birmingham, Alabama. So.
Yeah, and I think technically the Pac-12 is about to move their offices to Vegas. I mean, that's a nuanced point, but yeah, it's a longer private flight to get
it
to
is.
The conference offices now.
Before the break, somebody said, I know it's all about football revenue, but I think UCLA and USC just made it clear they do not care about baseball, just sunk their programs with going to the Big Ten. I hadn't thought of that one yet. But that is a weird statement you're making about certain sports.
How did they sink their programs? I don't understand that.
Because you're going into a conference that you're joining up with, what, 14 teams that have to deal with extreme weather in a way you don't have to, and it puts them at a disadvantage for parts of the year. Maybe you're looking at it as, well, we're in good weather, so that's a good thing. But all those trips you have to take now,
right?
You get home series, certainly. But now you're going to have to go. You're going to have a series in Madison, Wisconsin that might get compromised pretty fast. It's not a highly respected baseball conference, is what I think this texter is talking about here.
Well, apparently there's some secondary language in the contract that takes USC and UCLA to the Big Ten that has all baseball conference games being held in California for the first half of conference play.
There it is.
With USC and UCLA being on the road for the second half.
They're going to do it like the USFL. Everybody plays in LA.
Right.
Just make that their Birmingham. All right. There's some college football realignment talk. If you want to jump in, it is on the move now. USC and UCLA starting a whole new wave of conversations.
And by the way, the next big chip to fall, because I realized that four new schools could be a part of the Big 12 by the end of today, but the next big chip to fall before any other major chips make moves is going to be Notre Dame. Notre Dame's going to have to figure out what it is that they're about to do.
That's another discussion. Yeah, we'll get into that today, too. Does Notre Dame find a conference, or can they continue to be an independent? We will get into that. Got two conversations coming for you today. Our normal Tuesday conversation with Jeff Ward, jeffwardshow.com. Remember to go at Jeff Ward Show for tickets to the After Hours event he's got coming up later on this month. And we normally talk to Joe Cook of Inside Texas on Mondays, so we're going to move him to Tuesday today. He'll jump in at 2, talk Texas recruiting. We've got that discussion to have because the Longhorns did add yet another name to that 2023 class, and we'll talk other Longhorn stuff with Joe. Up next, though, we'll get you an update on the Brittany Griner situation, plus the top 10 jerseys in the NFL for 2022 came out, and there was an interesting item not on the list. We'll tell you what it was on the horn. Stevie, I wish they couldn't change it, but they're trying to change every college football conference we ever loved. Stevie Ray Vaughan starts it off today. Tuesday means it's Texan Tuesday. Cameron starting off with SRV every Tuesday. Is this song called Changes?
Change It.
Change It. It is called Change It. Okay. SRV starting us off. We're talking college football. Real quick, Trey, before we get to a couple other things, another headline in the realignment discussion involving the Big 12 and what they might be thinking.
Yeah, so according to Dennis Dodd, as of 20 minutes ago, the Big 12 is deep in discussions to add up to six Pac-12 teams after USC, UCLA defect to Big 10. Mm. So the four that we had already talked about, and according to this article, I'm just going to read it verbatim. There is also consideration of adding Oregon and Washington to make the Big 12 an 18-team league, the largest in the FBS.
Go to 18.
This,
wow,
strikes me as the Big 12 trying to control the narrative right now by making it even seem plausible that the Big 12 is considering those other four schools before Oregon especially, but then also Washington too. I mean, give me a break. The Big 12 is thinking of including Oregon and Washington to go along with those other four, then they are still being led by complete boobs, which I guess isn't all that unheard of.
I'm assuming that's a rearranged conversation. I would assume that they're thinking Oregon, Washington, and maybe those other schools, but I don't know that all that stuff really matters in terms of the ordering, but I agree with you. They should be if they can get Oregon and Washington, I don't know if they feel like a college football power to me right now, but at least with Oregon and Washington, you'd have some names. It would be, obviously, it'd be a mess in terms of geography, but it would get you a little bit of power, but boy, your power is way up there in the Northwest.
Why are you trying to just throw as much crap against the wall as possible right now if you're the Big 12? I understand that you do need to be aggressive, but you need to be logically aggressive. You need to show some rationale here versus just trying to add every available school possible. Getting to 18 or 20 or 22 conference teams, for some reason, that may seem like a good idea to somebody in the Big 12 offices. I can assure you it's not, though. You don't necessarily want to be saddled with Colorado and the two Arizona schools right now. Like, even Utah, which, by the way, makes the most sense out of any of the six schools because you are adding BYU, and so you're at least fostering a natural rivalry that does exist otherwise. But those other three schools come with plenty of pitfalls, too. It's like adding Houston as one of your conference teams, or even UCF, I think the argument could be made. Like, Cincinnati has obviously just really gotten it done in football, so that one makes a lot of sense. BYU has that national audience. But you got to be careful about adding too much mediocrity to a conference that is struggling with its own mediocrity, too.
Our man Chris Bennett texts us, the Big 12 should raid the Pac-12 a little earlier, and then he says Big 12 is trying to save its Power 5 status. That is it. And in one way, Trey, I could disagree with you a little bit. The Big 12 might just need to keep the attention on them somehow, and this is maybe their way of doing it. Because if you can get a little bit with Oregon, and if you can get Oregon and Washington to think about it, then maybe you have a little bit of relevance. Because to me, that's what the Big 12 and I mean, the Pac-12 now, it's going to be so tough if these teams get plucked away. They may just be gone or have to change or have to go into a G5 status or I don't know what. But maybe that's what the Big 12 is thinking. Let's get the numbers up, but also a couple teams people might care about, and then see if we can still live in a, you know, Power 5 world.
It doesn't happen often, but occasionally major conferences die. It's what happened with the Big 8, the SEC, back in the 1990s, and we're watching the death of the Pac-12 in real time right now. We are.
It feels like it. I mean, obviously, ultimately the Big 8 had somewhere to evolve to, and the SEC has changed, but it obviously, you know, it certainly hasn't gone away.
So the Big 12 is going to evolve, whereas the Pac-12 is going to go the way of the Southwestern Conference.
Oh, you said Southwest. I thought you said SEC. Okay.
I may have said SEC. I meant SWC.
Right. So I think that may be where we are headed, and the Big 12 is just trying to find those little pieces to say, hey, look, we got this. We got this school. We got this. We got a little interest here and there. And they're going to try to put together enough mid to upper mid level teams. And then they're going to play the numbers game. Like you said, if they're reading articles that tell them it's all headed to not just 16 teams, what about 20 teams? All right, well, let's try to get there and see if they care about us at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, the Pac-12 may try and go after a strategy that is to care more about some of those secondary sports and focus less on football. The problem with that, though, is that football is still the moneymaker for a lot of these schools. Even if you're not necessarily competing for conference championships or national championships in football, football is still what pays the bills for everything else, even on the West Coast right now.
Somebody texted, if you're Texas Tech or Kansas State, can you afford to fly to Oregon or Washington for every sport every year? That's a fair question.
If I'm Texas Tech people right now, and I know Kirby Holcutt is not going to sit on his hands, I'm trying my damnedest to get into the SEC to see just how open the SEC is to adding more schools. I just don't know where they are with that right now, and I don't think they'll even know for sure. Greg Sankey and his subordinates will really know where they are until Notre Dame decides on what their future is going to be regarding whether they affiliate with a conference in football.
We're going to keep our eyes on that story, obviously. Big 12 may be looking to add some teams off of this Pac-12 decision. Not Pac-12 decision, let me rephrase. Off of the USC and UCLA decision to leave the Pac-12. A lot of college football out there. We'll get into a little bit of NFL here in a second as well. Just a quick update on this Brittany Griner story. It has gotten to a point, and if you don't know, the trial is underway. A lot of people following it think this is going to be a show trial in many ways, that a conviction is coming, that a big sentence is coming for Brittany Griner. So yesterday, Brittany Griner wrote a letter to the President of the United States saying, among other things, quote, "I'm terrified I might be here forever. I realize you're dealing with so much, but please don't forget about me and the other detainees. Please do all you can to bring us home." Trey, I'm reading there may be an idea to do a prisoner trade or detainee trade, however this is termed, with a Russian that has been in the United States. And then there's also, I mean, there are other U.S. detainees that are not famous folks that have been there a while, one all the way back to 2018. But now Brittany Griner going to the level of writing the president to try to make sure that they don't forget about her and her situation.
It's a shame because it does feel like she is at least a bit of a political pawn right now, Chad. But at the same time, when you are in a country outside of the U.S. that oftentimes has very different sets of rules, including a rule that, while it seems ludicrous to all of us, but carries a heavy sentence like getting caught with cannabis in Russia does, then you're running that risk every time you go into that country with that quote-unquote illicit product and try and leave the country with said illicit product. And unfortunately, Brittany Griner, in doing so, left herself exposed, and now she is unfortunately suffering the consequences of that. And I hope that they go with a lightened jail sentence for her, but if not, perhaps there is some sort of trade that can be made to try and get her back to the U.S.
The key thing, I think, to remember here is along the way, the U.S. government went from she's just a U.S. citizen that's detained in Russia to she's being wrongfully detained. That is the argument that at some point they have got to either try to make or they have tried to make it. That's different than saying you broke their law. They're saying now she's being wrongfully detained in some way.
Trying to keep this pretty apolitical. This administration has tried to talk tough with Russia over the last couple of years now, and it hasn't worked out very well. And Russia has called their bluff on more than one occasion, and the U.S. has really sat idly by. So they didn't treat that threat all that seriously, and up to this point they really haven't needed to do so because the U.S. hasn't responded in kind.
Brittany Griner also in her letter to President Biden expressed a sadness for not being with her family on the 4th of July. This has to be tough. She is the daughter of a Vietnam War vet, so the 4th of July matters a lot to her. She said, "It hurts thinking about how I usually celebrate this day because freedom means something completely different to me this year." That's hard to imagine, man. February 18th, 17th, 18th, somewhere in there, is when she went to jail in Russia.
So coming up on 5 months now.
Oh, has to be a scary, scary situation. So there's the latest on the Brittany Griner story. Also, on the lighter side of sports, I saw something interesting over the long weekend that some Cowboy fans were talking about. The best-selling jerseys of 2022, Trey, have been released by the NFL. So to this point, best-selling jerseys of the year. And they released the top 10. and threw out a tweet with it on there, and there's not a Cowboy in the top 10.
That's a little bit surprising.
There's no Dak. There's no Zeke. And there's no...
Micah Parsons?
No Micah Parsons. There's no CeeDee Lamb. Obviously, Amari Cooper, not a Cowboy anymore. But CeeDee Lamb's a name I would think maybe.
Who is in the top 10?
So, there are only two guys in the top 10 that are not quarterbacks.
Okay.
You want to take a stab?
So, the eight quarterbacks are Matthew Stafford.
No. Stafford's not top 10.
Okay.
That one surprised me.
Weird. Yep. All right. Then Tom Brady.
Yep. Five.
Mahomes.
He is nine. Yes.
Nine.
He's number nine.
Allen.
Josh Allen, number two.
Rodgers.
Rodgers is not top 10.
What?
Kind of hard to believe. He's been there so long, maybe established, hadn't changed a number. Maybe that's just, it's, you know, Packers jersey, so classic. Just don't need to buy another one, I guess.
Jalen Hurts?
No. Think of guys that change teams.
Russell Wilson.
Number one, because you got to go buy the new jersey.
Yeah. Mitch Trubisky?
Not Mitch. Good guess, though. I like that guess.
Drew Locke?
Not Drew.
Did you see Drew Locke get punked hard by the U.S. Open Twitter account over the weekends?
No.
He had to respond in kind. DK Metcalf had to come to Drew Locke's defense at one point.
U.S. Open golf or tennis?
Tennis. It was pretty savage.
Okay.
We'll maybe go over it during another segment. But what are the other quarterbacks? Because clearly I'm not very good at this game. Kyler Murray.
So Russell, one and two. Kenny Pickett is four.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Well, I guess Trubisky is a joke. I guess I should have gone Pickett.
Then Tom Brady. Then Mac Jones at six.
Oh, Mac Jones.
Justin Herbert is eight. I mentioned Mahomes at nine, and Joe Burrow is 10. The two guys that are not quarterbacks are both receivers. Devontae Adams, new Raider, so that's the new jersey feel. Not the state, but a new jersey feel to the list. Devontae Adams is three, and Cooper Kupp is seven.
Because the other new jersey feel would have been both the sleeves being cut off the jersey.
That's correct.
Turn it into a tank top.
Show the gun show, yeah. So Cooper Kupp is number seven on this list, but no Cowboy in the top 10. So those that want to get on the Cowboys would say, oh, well, maybe speaks to a little apathy, maybe speaks to a little blasé attitude around the Dallas Cowboys going into 2022.
Little uncertainty, if nothing else, although I will say I'm surprised that Micah Parsons is not. I figured Micah Parsons would be the one guy that makes the list.
The only thing is, man, you know how fans love their offense.
They do.
There's, I got in India, no defensive players. None. Think of it. There's no Aaron Donald.
No.
You know, there's no.
It's an offensive league.
There's no badass cornerback. There's none of those things. So what Jalen Ramsey is not him. It's top 10, and it's all quarterbacks and two receivers. So just something to think about there. If you're a Cowboys fan and you want to help that number, go ahead and get out there and buy your updated Dak jersey or somebody, Dak or Zeke jersey, or maybe Tony Pollard. Maybe we can get Tony Pollard into the top 10 if they start handing him the ball a little bit more. All right, coming up at 1:05, it's Jeff Ward from the Jeff Ward Show, jeffwardshow.com, live each weekday. And now we'll tell you more about that after hours event coming up and how you can get tickets. Up next, though, in the crap bag, the Americans did not get those belts at the UFC event, but a couple Americans still have a shot at Wimbledon. We'll get you an update there on the horn.
Every day, it's a getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, hey, hey. Every day, it's a getting faster. Everyone said, go ahead and ask her. Love like yours will surely come my way.
That's a Texas boy, too. Everybody knows this one, right?
Buddy Holly?
There you go.
Yeah. Wasn't totally sure about that one.
I was going to say Ron Burgundy. Why'd you throw the question mark on there?
I truly did not know.
Okay, fair enough. Buddy Holly, Lubbock, Texas. Back in the day, joining SRV on the show today. Texan Tuesday. Oh, what it could have been. What if Buddy Holly had lived past February 3rd of 1959? Where does the career go? Where does rock and roll go? How is he a part of it? Would have been an interesting thing to check out, to see how would he have evolved?
Well, selfishly speaking, Chad, my conversation a few weeks ago with Don McLean while you were on vacation wouldn't have been as cool.
Don McLean.
Talked about the 50th anniversary of American Pie.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He would have had to write about something else.
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody else dies. Maybe it wouldn't have been Buddy Holly. Okay. Maybe it's Richie Valens, Big Bopper, and there's a different guy. I don't know.
The Little Beeper, maybe.
Could be. Yeah, The Little Beeper was good. Man, that third album.
Thankfully, he stayed alive.
Woo! Mercy. All right, coming up, we'll talk with Jeff Ward at 1 o'clock. Remember that After Hours event he's got coming up at Jeff Ward Show on Twitter. They had a successful first version of that, so they're going to do it again over there on the east side. We'll get into more of that and some of the details. Right now, though, let's get into the crap bag. I'll get you updated on a couple of, well, a country club sport and a very, very brutal sport. Here we go.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. It was a very balanced weekend for me because I did watch UFC and I watched Wimbledon. So etiquette sport, a lot of, you know, stay away from each other. We never touch to the sport where you're brutally beating on each other. So try to keep that balance. I told everybody on Thursday there were two Americans trying to get belts in the UFC. Trey, neither of them were successful.
Aww.
And neither of them were successful by a long way. Neither Max Holloway or Jared Cannonier really even got into a discussion where I could say they were even putting themselves into a situation to try to win the fight. Max Holloway ended up with a cut, Trey, that was just one of those nasty, gross, you hate to look at the screen kind of cuts. He got a vertical cut right here on his eyebrow. It went up,
Ooh. But
it was so wide, they could stick the whole, like, Q-tip swab thing in there.
That's not good.
It was gross. And obviously, it's coming down in his eye. He was messy. He was bloody. Volkanovski won that fight pretty easily. And then Israel Adesanya kept his belt. Jared Cannonier could not get the win there. We do have an interesting fight maybe coming up. There was a guy on the card named Alex Pereira, and he has two wins over Israel Adesanya, but both were in kickboxing.
Okay.
So not truly in UFC, but at one point in one of those fights, he knocked Israel Adesanya smooth out with kickboxing gloves, which is a slightly bigger deal because they're bigger gloves.
Okay.
And he knocked him flat out, just on his back, looking at the lights, gone. And this is, I don't know, a few years ago. So now the thought is, okay, let's see what if they fought in the UFC, could he maybe take the belt? So that may be coming in the UFC. Now, as far as Wimbledon goes.
Real quick, I saw, because we talked about him heading into the weekend, Cowboy Cerrone did fight, I guess, what was one final time because he was not very good and immediately announced his retirement after the fight.
See, I didn't even realize. I hadn't even followed that fight. So he lost and retired.
I guess so,
okay,
yeah.
There you go. Look at you giving me a UFC update.
I know. What the heck just happened? So I blacked out for a second.
A, I love Cowboy, and B, if he wants to, I kind of hope he gets into maybe commentary. I think he could do a good job of that.
That's a popular sentiment there. I've heard Joe Rogan talk about the same thing.
I think he could absolutely do that. In terms of Wimbledon, big names are still in. Novak Djokovic lost the first two sets today, but he came back and won 3-2 and 2 in those final three sets. He took out Sinner today, Jannik Sinner, who had a good run. He's now out, so Djokovic is into the semifinals. Also, Nick Kyrgios, the ever-problematic Nick Kyrgios, who always seems to have something going on. Nick is into the quarters. He will play his quarter, I believe, tomorrow. And then if he could end up in a semifinal with Rafael Nadal, that would be a hell of a match. So the Kyrgios and Nadal matches are tomorrow. Djokovic got through his match today. Goffin and Nori are on court right now. Goffin. David Goffin is up 2-1. And then also on the women's side, there's a lot of names out on the women's side. So there's some folks trying to make a name for themselves. And a couple actually are Americans tomorrow, if you're interested in such a thing. Tomorrow you got Taylor Fritz taking on Rafael Nadal. Taylor has done a pretty good job in this tournament. Taylor, if you don't know, I had to look him up myself. Born in California, 24-year-old American, making a decent run in the tournament. He's playing Nadal tomorrow. And then on the women's side, Amanda Anisimova, who is the woman who has taken out a couple names. One of them is Coco Gauff. And Amanda Anisimova, she was born, her parents immigrated from Russia If I'm reading the story correctly, she was born in New Jersey, ended up in Florida, and she's got a big game. She's the 20th seed. She's taking on former champ Simona Halep tomorrow morning, so she could get into a semifinal. So Wimbledon continuing. If you're a fan of the biggest names, it's the men's side. It's Djokovic and Nadal still in. They would play in the final, and if they did, Trey, it'd be Nadal going for 23 overall and Djokovic going for 21 overall. And then the other thing to keep in mind, if you're keeping track of COVID things and vaccine stories, remember, Novak Djokovic still has not gotten vaccinated. That doesn't matter at Wimbledon, but the U.S. Open won't let him play if he doesn't get vaccinated.
Really?
So, yeah. So he's already missed the opportunity in France, and he missed the opportunity in – did he not play in Australia either? He's missed – he's going to end up missing, I think, three of the four opportunities this year at a Grand Slam because of that rule. So this is extra important for him to maybe get a Wimbledon because he's not going to get to play in New York if he stays, if the rule stays the same and he stays the same.
Shame on the U.S. Open for keeping that strategy in place.
It has been a weird world.
Failed strategy that has been dropped pretty universally. So for individual entities within the sports world to still be grasping hold of this, it's a pathetic look.
Weird that Wimbledon decided to, you know, Wimbledon decided to go that way with that decision, but they still decided that the Russians and Belarusians couldn't play, and the points don't count in the computer. There's like a lot going on at this particular tournament.
Yeah, virtue signaling takes many forms, Chad.
There's a lot going on. By the way, I thought you would enjoy too. We were talking about dress code the other day at Wimbledon.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick Kyrgios, always ready to cause a problem. he walks on court the other day with a red cap on and maybe he didn't have the cap for the mat. He walks on, though, in red Jordans. He had red Nike Jordans on. And the tournament referee had to come tell him to take the shoes off. He had to wear different shoes. After the match, a member of the media asked, why did you wear those shoes onto the court? And his response was, quote, because I do what I want to do.
Yeah. Good for
him. All right. There you go.
Well, this is a country that is still that smitten with their king and queen. And princes and princesses, and they just, you know, that drama gets played up big time
it does.
In England.
It does.
There's a certain interbreeding that I guess requires you to still care that much about a dress code while playing sports.
But I'm going to tell you what, if it gets to that point, if we get to Friday and Kyrgios plays Nadal and Nadal is healthy, that is going to be one of the highest level skilled tennis matches ever.
Mm.
They're both incredible. Now, Nadal is incredible, and he cares, and he tries, and he wants it, and he hasn't had a lot of problems. Kyrgios is the opposite. He is a massive talent, but he will admit he's had issues. He's had stuff. This week he's talked about, a few years ago I played Nadal. They had to drag me out of the pub at 4 a.m. in a major.
Okay.
They had to drag me out of a bar at 4 a.m. day of the match.
That's one way to prep.
Right. But he is so talented when he's in. When he's focused and playing, he's incredible. So Wimbledon rolling on. If you want to check it out, ESPN, ESPN Plus. They got all kinds of good options for you there. And we'll be peeking in on some Americans tomorrow trying to advance. There is the crap bag. We do it every day about 12:45. Lots of talk about college football today with the realignment discussion. USC and UCLA headed to the Big Ten, and that has made some other conferences react. What's the Pac-12 going to do about it? Well, they're in talks with the Big 12 because the Big 12 might want to grab a few teams and just get a race to 18 or 20 going. What then happens to some other teams? We'll keep that discussion going today. We'll get into the Notre Dame part of that discussion at some point, I'm sure, because they're going to be a big domino to consider. Also, coming up at 1:30, the latest UT commitment. Last week, people were griping on the text line. I see all these offensive linemen. What about defensive linemen? Well, the Longhorns addressed that over the weekend. We will get, I say they addressed it. I guess it's the kids' ultimate decision. A commitment kind of helped them with that over the weekend. We'll get to that up next. It's Jeff Ward of the Jeff Ward Show. We'll talk some sports with him as well and get you set up for that After Hours event that is coming up if you want to get out and check out Jeff at that venue over on the east side. All that and more coming up on The Horn.